All right, let's jump right in. Today we're doing a deep dive into a real free speech showdown.
Ooh, a showdown.
Hague v. CIO.
Okay.
And this 1939 Supreme Court case, it's not just some, you know, dusty old legal history lesson,
yeah.
right? This thing is still making waves today, impacting protests in our parks to what you can even say on a college campus.
Yeah, it's wild how a case from the 1930s, you know, still has this kind of reach today, you
yeah.
know? We're talking about the Great Depression, the rise of unions, and like palpable tension between labor organizers and people in power.
Oh, yeah. And that tension was just boiling over in Jersey City. I mean, under Mayor Frank Hague, right? He was like totally against unions, just used every single tool he could to stifle the CIO. I mean, city ordinances, police force, anything you get his hands on.
Well,
people were getting arrested for handing out leaflets, like just for entering the city, and they just faced constant intimidation. It's like unbelievable.
It sounds like something out of a movie or something.
I know, right?
It was a really kind of wild time, and the CIO just wanted to hold meetings and recruit workers, which, you know, was completely legal.
Right.
But Hague saw them as like this huge threat, even called them communists,
and
used this ordinance that banned any gathering that might obstruct the government, which is so broad.
Right.
Yeah. Like, how do you even define that?
You could use it for anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it was a classic constitutional clash, right?
Exactly.
The CIO arguing that their First Amendment rights were being just totally trampled.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jersey City saying, well, we have the authority to maintain order here.
You know? Yeah.
So it's like that individual freedom versus government control.
A tale as old as time.
I know, right? And it's still relevant today.
Absolutely. Like, we see that debate playing out all the time.
All the time, yeah.
And that's that core issue that the Supreme Court had to grapple with.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, just a straight shot to the Supreme Court for the CIO. Their case went through the District Court, then the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, before finally landing in the Supreme Court.
So it was quite a journey.
It really was.
Yeah. And that's where things get really, really interesting. So the Supreme Court's ruling in Hague v. CIO, it didn't just side with the union. It actually created like this whole new legal concept, the public forum doctrine.
I mean, that's huge.
No.
Justice Roberts, you know, writing for the majority, he basically declared that streets and parks are public forums. Like, they're held in trust for public assembly and debate.
Okay.
So the government can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech in those spaces, like requiring permits for rallies, but they can't censor the content just because they don't like it or disagree with the message.
So does that mean like the government can't just shut down a protest? They don't like the message?
That's exactly what it means.
Wow.
Protests in front of government buildings, demonstrations on college campuses, even someone handing out flyers for their business on the sidewalk.
Right.
All these activities find protection under the public forum doctrine from Hague v. CIO.
It's amazing how like a case about a labor dispute back in the 1930s could have such a big impact on how we think about free speech today.
Totally. And it shows you that sometimes these like seemingly, you know, small cases can have these massive ripple effects that we're still feeling today.
Absolutely. But I do want to point out that the court wasn't unanimous in this decision, right?
Yeah.
Like there were concurring opinions where justices agreed with the outcome, but for different reasons, and then some pretty strong dissents too.
Oh, yeah. There were some justices who felt that this was way too much federal power, like interfering with a local government's authority, and they felt really strongly about that.
So even though the CIO won in the end, mm-hmm. there were still these kind of lingering questions about, like, you know, how much power does the federal government have over these state and local actions?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to free speech.
Yeah. And that tension between like federal power and states' rights is a theme that just keeps coming up again and again in American legal history.
And this case wasn't just about parks and leaflets.
Right.
This was a major victory for the labor movement. I mean,
I get that.
It cemented their right to organize and advocate for better working conditions without being silenced.
Absolutely. And even beyond that, you know, Hague v. CIO was part of this movement called incorporation, where the court started applying more of the Bill of Rights to state and local governments through the 14th Amendment.
Okay, so it's huge.
It is massive. The 14th Amendment was originally designed to protect the rights of newly freed slaves, but through cases like this, it's been used to expand the scope of so many other rights.
So this local dispute about union meetings had these ripple effects across the entire country, impacting how our rights are protected at every level of government.
Exactly. It shows how interconnected everything is in the legal system.
Now, here's something I found really interesting.
Okay.
The majority opinion relied heavily on the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to justify applying the First Amendment to the states. But some justices argued that it should have been based on the Privileges and Immunities Clause instead.
Oh, that's really interesting.
I know.
Like, those two clauses have different historical interpretations and implications.
Yeah.
Choosing the Privileges and Immunities route might have led to a whole different understanding of which rights are considered fundamental and how they're protected.
Makes you wonder what kind of impact that would have had on everything else down the line.
It really does. It highlights that constitutional law is not static. It's always evolving through interpretation and reinterpretation.
And sometimes in ways that we can't even predict.
Exactly.
Wow, this is already so much to think about.
I know, right?
And we're just getting started. So, you know, one of the things that makes this case so fascinating is those concurring opinions.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, these justices agreed that the CIO's rights were violated, but their reasoning for why was different.
Right.
You know, it's easy to kind of skip over those concurring opinions, but they're full of interesting insight.
Absolutely. Like, take Justice Stone, for example.
Okay.
He argued that the decision should have been based on the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, not the Privileges and Immunities Clause. He felt that due process provided a much stronger foundation for protecting fundamental rights from state infringement.
So even among the justices who sided with the CIO, there was debate about which part of the Constitution was, like, the most important in this case.
Exactly. It shows you how complex this whole thing really was.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, like, a simple right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
It involved, like, layers of constitutional interpretation, and those nuances have real-world consequences, you know?
Right.
Like we were saying before, had the majority gone with the Privileges and Immunities Clause, our whole understanding of fundamental rights and how they're protected could be totally different.
It's like if you choose a different path at a fork in the road,
totally,
you end up at a completely different place.
Yeah, and it shows why it's so important to understand not just, like, the outcome of a Supreme Court decision,
right,
but the reasoning behind it.
The why.
Exactly, and the concurring and dissenting opinions can really help us see those underlying legal debates playing out.
So speaking of the dissent, what were the arguments on the other side of this case? Why did some justices actually side with Mayor Haig?
So Justices McReynolds and Butler dissented in this case.
Okay.
And they argued that the city had the right to control its own parks and streets and that the federal courts shouldn't interfere in these local matters.
Okay.
And they pointed to a previous case, Davis v. Massachusetts, which had actually upheld the city's power to require permits for public speaking in Boston Common.
So they were basically worried about federal overreach.
Exactly. They felt the federal government was stepping out of line,
yeah,
and meddling and stuff that should be left to the states.
It's that classic tension, you know, between the federal government and the state.
Oh, yeah. It's like this constant push and pull that goes all the way back to when the country was founded.
I mean, and we still see that debate happening today, right?
Yeah.
Think about stuff like environmental regulations or gun control.
Absolutely. Haig v. CIO shows how this seemingly specific legal issue can actually touch on these bigger themes and principles that are still shaping our society.
All right. So we've talked about the context, the arguments back and forth, the majority and concurring opinions, even the dissents.
Mm-hmm.
What about the actual decision itself? Were there any surprises or, like, interesting twists in how it all played out?
Well, one thing that's interesting is that the court didn't just completely get rid of the Jersey City ordinance.
Okay.
They actually modified the lower court's ruling and clarified the injunction against those city officials.
So what does that mean in practical terms? Like, how did that modification actually change things on the ground?
Basically, the court said that Jersey City could still regulate the time, place, and manner of public assemblies.
Okay.
So they could still require permits for events in parks, for example.
Right.
But those regulations had to be reasonable, and they couldn't be based on the content of the speech.
Okay.
They couldn't be used to silence people just because the city disagreed with what they were saying.
So it wasn't like a total victory for the CIO.
Right.
Their freedom of speech and assembly still had some limits.
Yeah, it was more nuanced than that. But the court's decision did create some really important safeguards to stop those limits from being abused.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it recognized that the government does have a legitimate reason to maintain order and public safety.
Of course, yeah.
But that reason can't be used as an excuse for suppressing dissent or unpopular opinions.
So it's like walking this tightrope.
Exactly.
How do you balance protecting free speech while also making sure everyone is safe? Like, where do you draw the line?
And that's a question courts are still wrestling with today. There's no easy answer.
Right.
Haig v. CIO, though it did provide some important guidelines for dealing with this really complicated issue.
Okay.
It established that the government can't just ban speech. It doesn't, like, it has to show a really strong reason for any restrictions. And those restrictions have to be very specifically designed to achieve that purpose.
So if a city today tried to ban a protest because they just didn't agree with the message, you know, and they claim public safety concerns, the courts would really scrutinize that decision.
Absolutely. They'd want to make sure it wasn't just a way to silence people.
Wow. So Hague v. CIO is still super relevant even today.
Oh, yeah. Big time. It reminds us that we always have to be on guard against government overreach, even when it's disguised as something well-intentioned.
It's like that power can be so easily abused.
Totally. And the fight for our liberties is an ongoing process. It's not something that's ever really finished.
Okay, so we've talked about the legal stuff, but let's shift gears for a minute and talk about the historical significance of Hague v. CIO.
Okay.
You know, we know it was a big win for the labor movement, but what were the broader implications for society as a whole?
Well, like we said earlier, this case happened during a time of massive labor unrest in the country.
Right, like the Great Depression.
Exactly. Millions of people were unemployed and unions were fighting hard to organize and advocate for better working conditions for everyone.
Yeah. And Mayor Hague's actions weren't like a one-off thing, right?
Nope, not at all.
They reflected this bigger trend of anti-union sentiment and suppression across the country.
Totally. So Hague v. CIO wasn't just about this local fight in Jersey City.
Right.
It was a symbolic win for the whole labor movement.
Yeah.
It sent a really strong message that the government couldn't use its power to silence workers who were just trying to stand up for their rights.
So it was a pivotal moment for labor rights in America.
It really was. And it had these broader implications for civil liberties in general, too.
Right.
Remember, this was a time when the Supreme Court was still figuring out how to apply the Bill of Rights to the states through the 14th Amendment.
Right. So Hague v. CIO kind of helped push that movement forward.
It did. It helped expand the scope of constitutional protection for a lot of different individual rights.
Wow. And that trend is still going on today, right?
Absolutely. Think about landmark cases like Brown v. Board of Education, which desegregated schools.
Right.
Or Obergefell v. Hodges, which legalized same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
Those cases built on the foundation laid by decisions like Hague.
So it's all connected.
It really is. It shows how these earlier cases affirmed that federal courts can step in and protect individual rights, even when state governments are trying to infringe on those rights.
So this seemingly small case about a labor dispute in Jersey City ended up having repercussions that extended far beyond just that one city.
Exactly. It's amazing how these seemingly isolated events can have such a lasting impact on our society.
It really is. And that's one of the things that makes studying legal history so fascinating.
Totally. You can see how these small cases become catalysts for major social and legal change.
You know, speaking of that,
yeah.
I think it's worth going back to the public forum doctrine for a minute.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because it's such an important concept that came out of this case.
Absolutely. It's had a huge impact on how we think about free speech and assembly in these public spaces.
It's like this legal landmark.
It is.
That helps us navigate this really complex issue. But can you remind us again what it actually is and how it works in practice?
Of course. So the public forum doctrine basically says that certain public spaces like streets, parks, sidewalks, those places are so historically and traditionally connected with the exercise of First Amendment rights.
Right.
That the government's power to restrict speech in those areas is very limited.
Okay.
Think about it. For centuries, those are the places where people have gathered to share ideas, protest, and engage in public discourse.
So the government can't just ban any speech it doesn't like in these places.
Exactly as Justice Roberts said in Hague, these spaces are held in trust for the use of the public, and they've immemorially been used for purposes of assembly communicating thoughts between citizens and discussing public questions.
Wow, that's such a powerful statement.
It is.
It really captures why those public spaces are so crucial for free expression.
And the court understood that allowing the government to just arbitrarily restrict speech in these places would have this chilling effect on public discourse.
Right. It would make people afraid to speak out.
Exactly. And that ultimately weakens the very foundation of a democratic society.
But there are still some limits, right? The government can still regulate speech in public forums to some degree.
That's true. They can impose what we call reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on speech in public forums.
Okay.
But those restrictions have to be content neutral.
Meaning what?
Meaning that they can't target specific viewpoints or messages.
Okay, so for example, a city could require a permit for a big protest in a park.
Right.
But they couldn't deny a perm to a group just because they didn't like their message.
Exactly. That's the key difference.
Yeah.
The government can manage the logistics of speech in public forums, but they can't censor the content.
And this distinction has been upheld in a ton of cases since Hague, right?
Absolutely. The public forum doctrine has been applied to all sorts of situations, protests, demonstrations, street preaching, even just handing out leaflets.
Wow, so it's had a really broad impact.
It really has. It's protected the right of so many individuals and groups to express themselves in public, even when their views are controversial or unpopular.
It's incredible to think that this one case about a labor dispute in Jersey City had such a major impact on how we understand free speech in public spaces all over the country.
It really speaks to the power of legal precedent and how a single case can shape the legal landscape for generations.
So speaking of lasting impact, how is Hague VCIO relevant to legal battles over free speech and assembly that are happening today? Does it still hold up in court?
Absolutely. The public forum doctrine, like we've been talking about, comes directly from Hague.
Right.
And it's still a really important tool for protecting free speech in these public spaces.
Okay.
But the case also has implications beyond just public forums.
In what way?
Well, it shapes how we understand the balance of power between the federal government and the states and the role of the courts in protecting our individual rights.
So it's not just about those specific places.
It's about the bigger picture of how our government works and how our rights are safeguarded. And that's what makes Hague v. CIO such an important case to understand. It touches on so many big legal and historical themes, and it's still relevant to debates about civil liberties in the 21st century.
So can you give us some specific examples of how Hague is being used in legal arguments today? Are there any recent cases that cite it as precedent?
Yeah, definitely. Hague is cited all the time in cases about protests and demonstrations, especially those that take place on college campuses or in public parks.
Where that public forum doctrine really comes into play.
Exactly. For instance, there's the 2017 case Mattel v. Tam, where the Supreme Court struck down a federal law that prohibited trademarks that were considered disparaging.
Interesting.
This case was about the name of an Asian American rock band, and the court actually referenced Hague in its opinion, emphasizing the importance of protecting even offensive or controversial speech in public forums.
Okay, so that's a pretty recent example.
Yeah, it shows how those principles from Hague are still very much alive today.
It's amazing to think a case from over 80 years ago is still being used to protect free speech.
It really shows the power of those core legal principles.
So it's not just limited to protests and demonstrations either.
Well, Hague has also been cited in cases about religious freedom, freedom of association, even campaign finance.
Wow.
It's really a foundational case that's had this huge ripple effect across a ton of different areas of constitutional law.
I'm starting to understand why law students spend so much time studying this case.
Right.
It's like a key to understanding so many other things.
That's a great way to put it. Hague v. CIO really is a gateway to understanding some of the most fundamental principles of American constitutional law.
Now, looking ahead, what are your thoughts on the future of the public forum doctrine? Do you think it's facing any threats in today's world?
That's a great question, and it's one that legal experts are actually debating right now.
Really?
Yeah, the public forum doctrine definitely faces new challenges in the modern era. For example, social media has created all these new platforms for public discourse.
Yeah.
And it's not totally clear how traditional First Amendment principles apply to these online spaces.
Right. They didn't even exist when Hague was decided.
Exactly. So the internet has created this whole new frontier for free speech, and we're still trying to figure out the rules of the game.
It's like the Wild West of free speech.
Totally. And then you also have the issue of security concerns in a post 9/11 world.
Right.
Governments are understandably concerned about keeping people safe, and this has sometimes led to stricter limits on public gatherings and protests.
So the balance between free speech and security, it's constantly shifting.
Exactly. It's a moving target, and it's a delicate balance to strike. But I do believe that the principles from Hague v. CIO are just as important today as they were back in 1939.
Okay.
We need to be vigilant about protecting our right to assemble and speak freely in public spaces, even when those rights are inconvenient or they're challenged.
And we have to remember that the courts have a really important role to play in protecting those rights.
Absolutely. They're the guardians of our freedoms, making sure that the government doesn't overstep its boundaries. Cases like Hague v. CIO remind us how powerful the law can be in protecting us from government overreach.
So even though the world is very different than it was back in 1939, The lessons from Haig are still very much applicable today.
Totally. They're timeless, and they'll likely continue to be relevant for future generations, as long as we still value free speech and democratic principles.
Wow. Well, I feel like we've covered so much ground in this deep dive into Haig v. CIO.
It's been quite a journey.
It has. It really has. We've gone through history, legal precedent, and this ongoing fight for civil liberties.
I agree. It's a case that provides valuable insights into what free speech actually means, the role of the courts, and that constant tension between individual rights and government power.
It's a legal tapestry.
Mm-hmm. You know, it is.
With all these threads of history, politics, social change woven together. And it reminds us that even these seemingly small cases about local disputes can actually have a profound and lasting impact on our most fundamental freedoms.
Absolutely. They set precedents that can shape the legal landscape for decades.
Well, I'm feeling pretty inspired after this deep dive.
Me too.
It really makes you realize how important these legal battles are and how they affect our lives in these really significant ways.
I'm a little mentally exhausted too, to be honest.
I get it.
It's been quite a journey through all the intricacies of this case.
But it's been worth it.
Definitely.
Haig v. CIO is a case that needs to be debated and remembered. Its impact goes way beyond just the courtroom.
Absolutely.
And with that, I think it's time for us to wrap up this part of our deep dive. But before we move on, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought to consider.
Okay.
I'm all ears.
We've spent a lot of time talking about the importance of the public forum doctrine and how it protects our right to gather and express ourselves freely in public spaces.
Right.
But it's important to remember that those rights also come with responsibilities.
Oh, for sure.
We can't just use free speech as a weapon to harm others or to cause chaos in society. Totally, freedom without responsibility can be really dangerous.
We have a responsibility to use our voices in a way that encourages constructive dialogue, to engage in respectful debate, and to consider the rights of others, even when we disagree with them.
I think that's a perfect point to end on. The right to free speech is so precious, and it was hard won, but it's also a privilege that we should use carefully and thoughtfully.
Well said. Thanks so much for joining me on this deep dive into Haig v. CIO. It's been really enlightening.
It was my pleasure. These kinds of discussions are always intellectually stimulating.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey. We'll be back next time with another deep dive into the world of law, history, and ideas.
Until then, keep those legal minds engaged and curious.
You know, when we were getting ready for this deep dive, something that really struck me was like just the amount of legal talent that was involved in this case.
For sure.
I mean, Haig v. CIO, it wasn't just some local, you know, dispute.
Right.
It drew in some of the biggest legal names at the time.
Yeah. It was like a real clash of the titans.
I know, right?
The CIO had lawyers from the American Civil Liberties Union, like legends like Arthur Garfield Hayes and Morris Ernst.
Oh, wow.
I mean, these were people who dedicated their entire lives to defending civil liberties.
And then on the Jersey City side, you had lawyers representing this powerful political machine, you know, like they were used to getting their way.
Oh, yeah.
It's wild to think about those courtroom battles, like some of the sharpest legal minds in the country. Just going head to head.
It must have been intense.
I know, right?
And it wasn't just about legal strategy either. It was this whole battle of ideologies, like a clash between two very different visions of America.
Yeah. On the one hand, you had the CIO fighting for the right of workers to organize and have a voice.
Right.
They saw this case as crucial for economic justice and equality.
Absolutely. Right. And on the other side, you had Mayor Haig and his allies representing this more traditional view of society and power.
Right.
They saw unions as a threat to the status quo, and they were going to do whatever it took to stop them.
It's so interesting to see how these bigger social and political forces played out in the courtroom and how they ultimately influenced the court's decision.
Yeah, it shows how interconnected everything really is.
Totally.
Law doesn't exist in a vacuum, you know?
Right.
These cases are always shaped by what's going on in the world around them, by the political climate, the social movements of the time. Understanding that context helps us really grasp the true significance of a case.
Before we wrap things up, I want to go back to something we talked about earlier, the idea that Haig v. CIO was a major win for the labor movement. But it was really just one battle in this much bigger fight.
Oh, absolutely. The fight for labor rights in America has been a long and difficult one with a lot of setbacks along the way.
Yeah, Haig v. CIO was a huge step forward, but it definitely didn't mark the end of the struggle.
Not even close.
In fact, some would say that labor unions have actually been facing an uphill battle in recent decades, with membership declining and a political environment that's become less supportive
Yeah, it makes you wonder if the legal protections that we get from cases like Hague are really enough to protect workers' rights in today's world. The economic landscape has changed so much, and the legal system is always trying to catch up.
It's definitely something to think about.
It is.
But I think we've given our listeners plenty to ponder already.
I think so, too.
Well, it seems like we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive into Hague v. CIO.
We really have.
It's been a fascinating journey through history, legal precedent, and this fight for civil liberties that continues to this day.
I agree. It's a case that's just full of legal, historical, and social significance. And it's still relevant to so many discussions that we're having today about free speech, labor rights, and how power is distributed in our society.
Yeah, it's a reminder that these legal battles really matter, and they can have a huge impact on our lives.
For sure. And Hague v. CIO is a great example of that.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to encourage everyone listening to keep digging deeper.
Oh, yeah.
There's always more to learn about this case and the impact it had on American law and society.
Absolutely.
You know, don't just take our word for it.
Right.
Explore the sources yourselves, read different interpretations, and come to your own conclusions.
And we'd love to hear what you think, too.
Yeah.
Share your thoughts and reactions with us on our website or our social media pages.
Right.
What surprised you? What connections did you make to current events? We want to keep this conversation going even after this episode ends.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive into Hague v. CIO.
It was my pleasure.
And to all our listeners out there, thank you for coming along on this journey with us. We'll be back next time with another deep dive into the world of law, history, and ideas.
Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.